Ro Dolla Flo Bigliani, along with my partner, Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. After all, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hi, Rudy here with an incredible offer for our listeners. Do you have some extra cash laying around? Thinking about putting that cash in the bank? How about storing your treasures in heaven? There's no easier way to earn heaven's gold than with cash for heaven's gold. All you need to do is send your cash in an envelope to Cross Vegas, and we will give you a certificate for heaven's gold. Cash for Heaven's Gold is backed by a 100% prophetic guarantee from the same folks that assured us that Corona 19 would pass quickly. Don't let moth and rust destroy your chance of treasure. There's no better investment than cash for heaven's gold. Well, welcome, listeners across the fruited plains. That's right, you are here at Cross Vegas. And my, oh my, do we have a great show for you today. Thankfully, most of the content of our show really comes to us straight from the property in which we are standing. Isn't that right, my friend?
It is, and this is a property that's been proven to be quite an asset, even though it remains to some degree undeveloped. We know that behind the scenes and through our operations here, we are still utilizing these gifts from the Lord to just like make new gifts. Like we got a Santa Claus gift replicating elf gun, and we are shooting it at everything in sight.
Oh, so well said right there. And, you know, we've been trying to kind of expand our territory, not just in the physical space that we have, but really our influence, because that's what we are. We're social media influencers for the kingdom. And we thought no better way to do that than to host our first religious freedom event here at Cross Vegas.
You know, we've been exercising our freedoms of religion, you know, burning our masks off our face and such activities, but we thought, can we bring the ministry of the freedom of religious belief to more Americans who are suffering under the yoke of oppression from a homo secular society? So we set this up. A little bit help from Jolene to do some targeted messaging. We wanted to reach out to all the oppressed religious minorities of the American Southwest and have them come to Las Vegas, come into the heart of Las Vegas, which is really the beating heart is now Cross Vegas itself, and come join us for the Whatsoever I Wantest to Believest Is Best Fest, which we have just concluded last weekend, and I have to say, a rip-roaring success. Wouldn't you say so, Rudy?
Oh, absolutely. And TJ, when you were mentioning to me some of these things, because this was really something that you helped to spearhead, because you've got yourself more dialed into some of these political things. And I, you know, I did a little research about, you know, religious freedom in the Southwest and American religious freedom in the Southwestern territories. And, you know, honestly, I was a little bit surprised at who ended up showing up at this event.
You know, I was surprised too, but then I just counted it all as profit in the Lord, because you wouldn't believe the evangelistic opportunities that came up. We thought we might have some Patriot Church folks. We might have some America First folks coming in who are experiencing the cancel culture. we actually had the Native American church show up in force. The Skull Valley Goshute tribe, the Shoshones. We had a lot of folks that we didn't even imagine coming to this thing, but they did, and we had a wonderful time together.
You know, and I learned a lot, honestly. I learned a lot about our country's history, and I learned a lot of new names. I never met someone who was claiming to be a Comanche before today. And as this thing started, I met two really great guys, just to really zero in on this. One of them had a headband with a feather in it, and his name was Terry. And then there was another man, he was a gentleman, and his name was Sitting Duck. And he was dressed in just plain old, like, normal clothes, you know. And you can tell a lot, but the thing that stood out to me about Sitting Duck was his hair. I mean, you can tell a lot about a man by his hair, and Sitting Duck had this most beautiful mullet, and so I knew we were going to have a real good time with these fellas. And now, this mullet that I saw on him, just as a side note, this was no Missouri Compromise. This was no Tennessee top hat. This was a bona fide ape drape. And I thought, man, oh man, we are in for a good time. And I think from there, it was like as if that mullet just kind of, and the presence of these two men just took me off into a whole nother trajectory. And I mean, I don't want to get into the whole good stuff right away, but I feel like our listeners, they don't want to get hearing about some of this boring stuff that we tried to do with talking to these guys. They probably want to hear what happened in that after party, don't they?
Oh my, and it was quite an after party. I just briefly relate that I did give a little speech, which was primarily, you know, in my capacity as being an unofficial, informal advisor to Pauli White and the faith-based initiative in the virtual presidency from Mar-a-Lego land. But I gave a little speech about the usefulness of ranked religions, you know, and you can just talk about how you can observe the more successful religions and imitate their best qualities. Like if the booters stop being so darn Eastern, right? Like get some merch. That was my point first. And then, you know, what if the evangelicals allowed plural marriage like the old outlaw types of Mormons? You know, look out. You can call them the More Moms, I think. Well, anyway, I gave that little speech, but then there was a smattering of applause, I guess. But then that after party, I mean, that's where the real cultural exchange began. That's where we really started to get deep.
Yeah, I felt the need to kind of ask some questions to see how well some of the content that you were sharing was really connecting with them. And we got to talking about some things, and they mentioned some of the things that were of concern to them. But all the while, they were encouraging us to join them into this other tent that they had erected on our property. So we were in one of our tents, and then I noticed off to the side that they'd made their own tent. And but we were kind of talking from one tent as I was making my way into their tent, just thinking, I don't know if they had some refreshments set up in there or something. And they were telling me some things about like misrepresentations of Indian Americans, and just as a side note, you know, they did mention there's some sports teams, some ball clubs that have been misrepresenting American Indians. And I thought right away, take for example the ball club in Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians. And I think the problem, now I couldn't quite decipher exactly what they were, exactly their point, but if I could just summarize it for our listeners, I think the problem, see, I learned a lot at this event, is this the PC culture that we're in is we're taking like, you know, Indian, and we don't know if it means South Asian or American Indian. And so they're like, if you're going to call a team the Indians, you got to be clear about it. And so I think what they're saying is either call them the Cleveland South Asian Indians or the Cleveland American Indians. And it's those kind of things that they're real concerned about from a political standpoint. And from a religious standpoint, they're very concerned about the use of some type of substances that some have called hallucinogenics. Others call them Black Matilda or Bad Seed or Jeffrey Joints. And then others just refer to it as peyote.
You know, I had no idea that the Native Americans were living in such a utopic version of the United States. They don't have to obey all the same laws as everybody else. It's like a, it's like America, but better, with fewer laws, right? Like you can run casinos without getting all the same permits like you need to do in the Midwest. You can you pay different taxes or something. You got some land passage rights. You don't have to pay some of the tolls. The Supreme Court decided that. And then you got these dried up buttons of cactus. And man, we thought the Crystal Methodists had some strong stuff with their addictive sacraments, but that's nothing on mescaline.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, according to that, they told me about some Religious Freedom Act from the 90s, and they can use this this bad seed, this peyote, for religious services. And so therefore, that day, that event, and that afternoon, which turned into evening, which turned into morning, we had a religious service. If I can just tell our listeners, you know, it's, as you mentioned, these buttons of a dried plant, and they basically took, they had it already dried, and they kind of took two like silver offering plates, and they kind of mashed it all together, and they ground up those dried buttons, and then we smoked it in a cigarette joint, and we passed it around. And I tell you what, I mean, I haven't had such visions of sugar plums since you stuck me with that EpiPen.
Hallelujah. You know, it goes to their character as America's greatest sidekicks, that the Native Americans can be so hospitable, not just to invite us into their religious ceremony, but, you know, they knew, they did their research, right? They knew we were going to live in tents, and they said, you know what, let's meet those guys where they are and set up some tents of our own just to, you know, win in Rome. Do as the Romans do, you know, win among social mediators, living on a blank strip of land in a depressed corner of the city. Hey, just do as they do, right?
I kind of like the way that they kind of were so hospitable and meeting us where we're at and found that connection. And I mean, the hours just went by. I remember, because I was kind of taken by the arm with Sitting Duck and Terry into that little, I mean, it was a really hot tent, I'll say that. And I asked one of them, I was like, is this a cigarette joint, a tobacco cigarette, or is this a marijuana cigarette? And they just sort of laughed at me. And so I figured they thought I was joking, but it was a, I'm not really sure what exactly was in there besides peyote, but my goodness, I felt like in those moments I could see the way that our agendas were coming together, and it was almost like I could hear the music of politics, and I could hear colors, and I could see the music of friendship between us, and the sweat was pouring down my face, and it was getting my cornflower blue button-up shirt all soggy. And there were some real moments of clarity that I felt at that time. Now, looking back, I can't recall exactly my thoughts except my feelings. Is that how you were feeling it?
You know, I got into kind of a real encouragement debate with one of these guys. I think it was something like Rapid Fire Arrow Quiver McAllister or something. I don't know. One of these excellent names we don't see much of anymore in our cancel culture, where you can't call yourselves by your Native American name. But we got into this real excellent debate, and I actually made some notes. It was almost like automatic writing. I was trying to put all my thoughts down on paper as fast as I could. I kept up burning up these pencils and sharpening them with my teeth, and just kept on writing, trying to write down everything he was saying, everything I was saying. We came up with some real interesting stuff. And what I didn't know I would realize, I mean, talk about opening your mind. We got these people who have just been waiting all this time for somebody like Trump to come along and give voice to everything they've been saying for hundreds of years. Like there's this whole replacement narrative going on, right? Like, you got Europeans coming in with all their weird languages and their weird diseases and stuff, and they're just pushing these Native Americans out of their ancestral territory. And I'm like, that's exactly what's happening to white America right now. And boy, if you want to claim on the replacement narrative, you just go there. You're not like, well, I'm native to America. You could say, we are Native America. That's powerful. You got a couple extra hundred years there.
Amen. Amen. I like that, because there are some, I had to disagree with a couple of them fillers that were talking about them wanting a voice in Washington and a seat at the table in Washington and an advocate in Washington. And I said, that's exactly the opposite of where I see things. I mean, we're trying to get away from Washington. We're trying to drain the swamp. And so I clearly told him, I said, I truly don't believe that's what the Lord has for you. We're trying to drain the swamp. We need to, instead of encourage you back into the swamp, we need to collect each and every one of you that's advocating for Native American rights, and we need to draw you up together and drive you out of the swamp. Because that's the only way that something's going to happen, is if we can collect you up together and drive you out of the swamp so that the swamp can die. And I like what you said about, you know, right now in this culture that we live in, I feel like American Christians are kind of being, have a lot to relate to with Native Americans, but we got to start by gathering up together and just creating a journey out of the swamp, lined up single file. And that's kind of what we've done too, is, you know, me and you, we could have decided to be, you know, these type of moguls and social mediators in Washington, but we decided, no sirree, we're going out west. We're going to the desert. And that's one way that I think that we could speak into their lives.
Yeah, I am with you 100%. And, you know, they like their open spaces. They like their exotic pets. They like their cattle. Ain't no Impossible Burgers up in the reserve, am I right, Shoshones? And they like their alcohol. You know, they're a model. That's what I love about American history. The deeper you dig, the more inspiration you can get to keep on living exactly as you are.
That's absolutely right. And we found so many connection points with these fellers. I mean, the fact that we're in Las Vegas surrounded by casinos, I find out that most of them are surrounded by casinos. We're finding, you know, we get so much energy out of speaking to this generation and this time in the as we talked about before, magicians and gambling and all this. That's exactly the type of setting that they've put themselves into. So instead of trying to talk about our differences, I think we should celebrate these similarities.
I am with you on that. I felt the kind of love and brotherhood that I have only felt before at a rally to try to find out who could be the real president in 2028. I mean, there was just this spirit of prophecy and brotherhood there, where everyone was like, I think I might be the next one. And you get some cheers and some back pats, and someone else would say, oh, I think I'm the next one. Man, everyone just loving each other, just stepping forward to volunteer to be the next president. It just was a love fest. And man, I felt that with the Shoshones. I felt that with the Skull Valley Goshute tribe. I mean, is that not badass, that name, Skull Valley Goshutes? You don't make that up.
No, you can't make that up. That's amazing. I mean, at the end of that night, which turned into morning, as I said before, I just had to pat them on the back and say, y'all are awesome. And thank you for these party favors, because they left some of them dried buttons for us. After all, we'd run out of the EpiPens, and there ain't no more vaccines for us, so we needed a little something else in our pantry, so to speak. And it was a blessed event, and I tell you something, I'm looking forward to the next one.
As am I. I think we should go triannual on this, if not quadriannual or quintiannual. I am ready to enter into that holy personality deterioration, as the doctors call it, with these wonderful brothers. You pray every day, and if you're using our prayer box, you know which of your prayers are being answered on a daily basis and with what type of efficiency. If you're praying the dumb old way without AI helping you, I mean, you don't really know when any of those prayers are answered. One of the prayers that I've been praying, I feel like I've been getting a little more lonely in this prayer. This is, of course, the prayer that the UFOs would be kept away from Earth. I know since the 1950s, we have had a firewall of anti-alien prayers being prayed in the United States, and because of the increased secularization in America, that firewall of prayers has been crumbling. Our culture is just about homosecular enough to stop resisting the probing that these aliens would bring to us. And this is a major area of concern, not just for me, but I've been seeing it show up in the comments fields on some of our videos, of some of our audios. And I know that this is something we are feeling together. Why aren't my prayers against the UFOs being answered?
That's true, and I've been praying that prayer faithfully for many years, and it has encouraged me that in the previous administration that there was, just to bolster those prayers, a whole Space Force set up, and that really encouraged my heart, because, you know, we need our prayers plus our government to be in alignment. And then, I'll admit that the fear has been growing lately. I've been watching some of the social medias, and I noticed that around the time that COVID came to America, there were an increase in UFO sightings. And I started to think, oh, I think there might be something there. And it has got me wondering about the origins of COVID being from alien life forms. And so that got me praying even more. And it's true that, you know, how do we respond to the fact that the more we pray, it seems like the more UFOs keep swirling around in our skies. And I know that a lot of our listeners are feeling the same way. And this is something we got to work through and process.
You know, it's almost like a spiritual attack, because they got, I think the aliens have got some kind of prayer dar. A radar that detects the faithful prayers, so that those folks who are always peppering their prayers with anti-UFO petitions to the Lord are somehow detectable, you know, to the aliens. They know that you're opposing them. they know that you don't want them cutting up around the skyways, and you certainly do not want them coming at you with their probes. That would be actually the worst of it.
That's true, and I think there's something to that, because I've noticed that whenever you do see a UFO sighting, it's always in a Christian nation. It's in America, and then the next probably most predominant UFO sighting country is Australia, and we know that they're more Christian than those peoples in Europe. And when was the last time you saw a UFO sighting with a mosque in the background? You know what I'm saying? When was the last time you saw a UFO sighting over the Great Wall of China? And so what all I'm trying to say is that this isn't just a theory, but I think there's just some proof that really supports what you're getting at there. And I don't know if I really want to say this, because I don't want to arouse our listeners too much, because I know UFO sightings get people a bit scared. And we all know that the main thing we're scared of is having that personal encounter and probing with an alien. And that's something that, you know, deep down, I'm praying against the UFO sightings, but number one, I'm praying against getting probed. And I'm just going to be honest with that. And I'm going to say that because I think our listeners feel the same way. But I got to be honest that, you know, we can't hide the fact that there have been some events even on our property that have gotten us real concerned. And you know how much praying's been done here across Vegas. And the aliens, they're catching on to that. And in the past, they used to harass people with things like crop circles in their farmland. And I noticed the other day there was a unidentified flying object drawing on one of our oversized dumpsters here on the property. It was if I can describe it to you, it was a rocket ship, cylindrical flying ship that was pointed in an upward trajectory, and it had two small rocket booster, I guess we call them sort of spheres at the bottom. And it was, the weird thing was, is it was shooting, you would think it'd be shooting the rocket fire from the bottom, but it was had rocket fire shooting from the top. And I believe they did that to harass us and say, no, 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 you can't be praying them prayers over here, because we got you on our radar.
We are like a beacon of anti-UFO prayers, and I think unfortunately we've been attracting their attention too much, but we will not be cowed by these attacks and these harassments. But we might consider adding some new probe-proof items to your prepper shopping cart. So if you're dialing up the website to go to Jim Baker's site and getting some Joseph Storehouse, you know, the $10,000 worth of cat food at a time, and, you know, propane generators, meme generators, whatever you need to make it through the coming cultural shutdown storm. Well, I don't know, maybe you can add some of these anti-probe items just as kind of a safety measure, a reasonable safety measure, now that the UFOs are all throughout our skies.
Oh, absolutely. And it hit really close to home just the other day when that Chinese rocket was shot up into space, and then lo and behold, we hear it's hurtling back to Earth. And I thought, what in the world? I'm pretty sure that was done by aliens, because we all know that the Chinese are good at math, and they would never have made a mistake like that to have a rocket just fall back down to Earth and not know where it's going to fall. And so a lot of people were trying to blame the Chinese for doing that. No, no, no. We can blame the Chinese for a lot of things, but we're not going to blame them on bad math. We're going to blame the aliens. I would encourage all y'all to, you know, protect yourself. And that's one thing we can do. We can pray our prayers, but ultimately we do need to protect ourselves, and we need to equip ourselves with the armor and part of that armor is actual physical armor to not get probed.
You know, I've been around town, I think many dozens of times now, and there's a fair number of what might be termed adult stores, which, if you want to spend an edifying and profitable afternoon learning about America, American interests and ideals, those are quite a treat. But it relates directly to this topic, because what you might not know is that right alongside the items and media that are quite obviously pro-sin, you got quite a healthy representation of things that are anti-sin. Lots of stuff promoting chastity, promoting the intensification of guilty feelings and self-flagellation, you know, the dramatization of the punishments in stores for the users of the pro-sin items in the store. Anyway, all that to say, you might just want to swing into one of them places and pick up a chastity belt or some other type of rear entry prevention device in preparation for the alien invasion.
Yeah, we're not saying you gotta wear that 24/7, but when you see that bright light shining down, you just need to have it in a place where you can just slip it on real quick and to just have that extra layer of protection for yourself.
It's kind of like what fanny packs were made for, I think. Just keeping your extra probe prevention gear just right on hand. You know, you just whip it out. You just keep your keys in there, keep your wallet in there. You might have to take them out when you're making a purchase or something, but otherwise you keep that real close by you, almost like a can of mace or pepper spray or something when you're going for a run in the dangerous part of town.
Very well said, because, you know, we have a fanny pack, so you don't get your fanny packed.
I gotta say, that is poetry, my dear friend Rudy. I have never heard it put so well. This might be one of many reasons I hope we still have COVID going strong for the next few decades, right? Because we need a novel coronavirus as a bioweapon against the alien invasion, right? So, spoiler alert, that's the plot of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, right? So the aliens don't have any protection against the common cold, only it makes them break out in boils, right? I'm advocating we recruit a few elite squads of viral super spread soldiers who can congregate, kind of keep to themselves for the next few years, preparing for the aliens' arrival, incubating our most virulent and mutated forms of COVID, keeping it fresh, keeping it strong, ready to guard the rest of humanity when called upon.
That is an amazing idea. I love the way that you're always thinking outside the box, and you're a crafty one, you know, TJ. You're a real crafty one, and I think that is kind of that way where we're supposed to be as innocent as doves, but as shrewd as serpents, and you got your serpent hat thinking cap on with that one. I applaud you on that one.
You know, I think this goes even deeper. You want to bring back in our new Native American brothers, something we learned from their history. What if we have our super spread soldiers kind of cozy up with a bunch of American flag, like bedding and clothing, and get them all nice and soaked up with COVID juice, and then when the aliens come, you do like a sham trade. Like, you give me your Lightspeed hyperdrive or food multiplier, and I'll give you the Stars and Stripes bath towel or pillowcase as a symbol of, you know, it's my most prized possession. Which is true, right? That wouldn't be a lie. But then they get COVID as an extra little trick on top of that gift.
How beautiful is that the Stars and Stripes would be weaponized? Can you imagine? That's just beautiful. I mean, we ought to write a whole nother national anthem about that. You know, the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air. You know why? Because we just put a virus up in your ship with an American flag.
Return of everybody's favorite podcast segment after a one-week hiatus, Turnt or Burnt. So, Rudy, we got some real things in the news. We can't even keep up. I mean, I hesitate to even say that we're commenting on current events. There's so many new current events, even more current, kind of like an extra right now, extra present time frame that we're working with. We're always a little behind on this, but something that did reach us that I'd like to hear your thoughts on: the Lil Nas X Satan shoes. So Lil Noxious, what's going on with this contemporary rapster? Is he turnt or burnt for doing these devil shoes?
Well, I was looking in at these devil shoes because I thought, you know, I at least need to understand it first. And first of all, a little surprised that the price is about a good $1,000 for a pair. I don't know if I thought, well, man, are these things made with, you know, pure gold? Then I found out they're made with human blood. So that was a little bit surprising. Maybe I didn't realize blood was so expensive. I might come at this a little different way. I'm curious what your take is on it because, you know, we haven't talked about this prior. But I thought about that verse about, you know, Satan would be trampled underneath our feet. And I thought, maybe that's what he's getting at. Because notice it's not a Satan hat. If it's a Satan hat, now we're putting it on our head. Now we're raising it up. But the shoe is something that what do we do with shoes? We stomp with them. We walk through the dirt with them. We kick a door open with them. We might accidentally, every time and again, step in a dog pile. But we don't honor them in that sort of way like a hat. And so for that way, I think he might be sending a message that people just don't understand. And you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say I think it's turnt.
Your knowledge of the scriptures is as impressive as ever, just as your faith is as strong as Mr. Universe and as simple as Mr. Bean. I like that connection you drew out there. I had one of my own. I was thinking about, you know, Matthew 12. If Satan is casting out Satan, then he is divided against himself. So the question really is, whose blood is in the shoes? So if it's Satan's blood or the blood of Satanists, I'd say that's kind of a cell phone, you know? If the devil's getting a little lightheaded and needful of a nap, I'm all for it. You know, you've been taking the blood out of this guy. He needs to sit there and have some carbohydrate snacks. That seems like he might be taking the day off from harassing the faithful. So to the extent that it's Satan's blood, I'm all for it. But you're right about the fact that there's money in shoes. I don't know, maybe we'd want to get in on something like that too. Like it's my firmly held belief that if Jesus had been alive at a time when basketball had been invented, he would be by far the best white basketball player of his generation. If the rabbis were truly concerned with a balanced education, he would have had some hops, let's say.
Oh, absolutely. And he wouldn't have been going up and down the floor with sandals on. No sirree. He would have had some of them best shoes, and he would have made the Air Jordans look like baby Jordans.
He'd be wearing those prayer Jordan high tops we've been talking about, you know. So if Nike sued to cancel Satan, what might they do to our Lord, though? So that's my only problem, is if Nike is willing to sue Lil Nas X about the Satan shoes, I can't expect better treatment for our Lord. But you don't ascend to heaven with some weak little ancient Near Eastern shepherd lats. You got some hops if you're the Lord. That's at least my extra-biblical hypothesis. I think it's well-supported, though.
It's well-supported right there. And if you're going to... And you're also going to be washing anybody's feet. You're going to be taping up their ankles. That would be the other connection right there. But I'm glad we're kind of in agreement on this thing.
All right. Turnt or burnt number two. Dr. Seuss getting canceled.
Now, this one... It kind of caused me to really do some deep digging into my own childhood. And I got to admit to you that as a boy, I did read The Cat in the Hat. And I did read Green Eggs and Ham. And I started thinking so much about these stories and about One Fish, Two Fish, and Horton Hears a Who. And you know what? I saw some really frightening things in these stories. I saw some small, skinny, furry creatures running about. I saw animals that are not made in the likeness that the Lord made them. And in addition to that, I saw a rhyme scheme that did not match the Psalms in any way. And so I got to say, you know what? Cancel that man. Cancel that man. That's where I stand on this thing. If this is about canceling Dr. Seuss, I think it's turnt.
Rudy, I don't know how to express how little I agree with you on this. I read all those same books, and I mean, I had some nightmares and stuff, but we're not talking about what kind of inhuman forms these inhuman forms are taking in these books. I mean, they're fictional, right? Like, that's the whole point. Like, you, when you do fiction, you don't have any accountability whatsoever to reality. So you got some slant-eyed, long-mustachioed China dogs. Those aren't reflective of people's attitudes towards Far Eastern folks. Those are just dogs. And they're not even from reality. So it's not possible for them to be reflective of racial animus at all. You know, big-lipped, dark-skinned gorilla servants. What, are they going to take away Easter and Christmas next? Like, those are as American as apple fritters.
You know, that's a good point. I have to agree with that, with where you're coming from. I mean, I guess I say I respect where you're coming from, but let me just sort of broaden this field here, because recently we find out that The Muppets is on the verge of getting canceled. And I was trying to find out what in the world The Muppets ever did to no one. And I looked up some articles, and it was very vague about things from the old Muppet Show. So I did some of my own research, and I watched, oh goodness, dozens of episodes of this Muppet Show. And I went through every single character from Kermit the Frog to Miss Piggy to some old dog-looking mouse named Skeeter. And just great characters, Ralph the dog, and I couldn't find a one thing that even the PC culture would find wrong with it. And then it came to me that there is one character, and I think this is what they're getting at, is he's a chef, he's a Swedish chef, and he's not speaking in English, and they gave him a bit of an accent. And he's kind of just speaking some gibberish, and he doesn't look quite right, and he's not really making good food. And I found out they're mocking the Swedes. And I said, oh, there it is. And I had to admit, I think they're onto something there. I want to know, you know, I know you're not down with canceling Dr. Seuss, but what do you think about canceling the Muppets on account of the Swedish chef?
I read your little report on this in our newsletter. And I have to say, my mind was opened, just like it was on the peyote earlier this week. I have never seen such a racist description or depiction of a Northern European in my life. They got him saying all this Bjornborg stuff and hoo-de-hoo-de-hoo. And I put on Google Translate during one of the episodes. It doesn't interpret that as Swedish in the least. They're not even getting close to some of the constructions and syllables. And of course, he's making fish, which is a stereotype associated with Swedes. He's making bad tasting, weird liquefied fish, which is an even more anti-Swedish racial screed. And they just put this character in front of children. They put him in front of children. And what's going to happen when those children grow up and they have a real Swedish chef making them some food, and what, are they going to walk out of the restaurant? What if their boss is a Swede? What if they go to Swedeland and they don't even know how to behave in the presence of real Swedishites?
I agree with you. I was really, really impacted by this, and it troubled me. I mean, it's one of those things I did lose sleep over, and the way that you would downgrade a grown man from a Nordic country like that. And I'm, granted, he is a puppet, but you don't downgrade someone just because they speak Sweden. And so for that reason, I want them to take this a step further, because they said that what they're going to do is make the Muppet Show on one of them streaming channels. That they was going to make it like a mature audience or something. I say you take that thing right off of that airways. You take that the next time that thing comes up on the streaming channel, you take it right off. That's what I say about that.
You know, and people will say, well, it's just puppets, right? Like kind of maybe how I was saying about the Dr. Seuss things. But, you know, it's the words that matter. When you say things, you know, how you like them to be, you know, words are powerful. We say that all the time in our ministry. So when they get people moving, like, hey, that man looks like a robber, and then everyone rushes at the guy and gets him and beats him up, and then you realize, well, maybe he only looked a little like the robber. What, you know, the point is, words that incite vigorous action are arrows in your quiver, spiritually speaking, and the more you shoot, the more targets you hit. So this is why this type of verbiage coming from a puppet, you know, operated up his rear end by no less than Jim Henson, the king of puppets, no matter how expertly wielded these puppets are, they can say very hurtful things.
That's right. And you never heard Mr. Rogers, you know, calling somebody out and downgrading somebody's culture. But you know what else? And you make a good point about it. I like this distinction you're making. It's one thing for Dr. Seuss to have animals that are this and that and the other, but in this case, you got a Muppet who's not an animal, he's a man. And you can't treat a man like that, whether he's from Norway or Sweden or Finland, whatever. And I think that's one of the most important distinctions here. This is a puppet man. This is not a puppet animal.
All right, our final turnt or burnt of the day, the vaccine passport. This has been in the news quite a bit. For a couple of guys who love their vaccines, you don't want to see the passports related to those vaccines get turned down. So I think this one is turnt, because, you know, there's prudential considerations we've got to get into, I think. We need visitors, we need customers, we need congregants, and we want to know that they've boosted up. We want the most lit up, boosted up vaccinites on the planet to come to our place, because they got to be on the same page a little bit, right? We're freely associating group of people in our congregation. We want some folks who can make it in and not bring that COVID darkness with them.
You know, I'm all for having a safe Cross Vegas, but I gotta say, I think this is, I'm also wanting to be able to show off my own COVID vaccination passport, because I've done some hard work, you know, getting them vaccines. But the thing, here's what I'm afraid of. And I want to take us back to our whole reason for getting vaccinated in the first place. And that was to be able to get autism so that we could be better at gambling in the casino. And we could have some of them special powers. And what I'm afraid of is that when we step foot in that casino, they're going to want to see the passport. And they're going to know that we're all powered up. And then I feel like there's going to be some rules against us. They're going to start stacking the deck against us. And it's going to be like, you know, the difference between Clark Kent and Superman. And it's going to be like a Kryptonite. So I'd rather the people didn't know that I was vaccinated.
I could see that. There's again, prudential reasons the other way around. So maybe we should publicly say that we're for the vaccine passports, but but maybe that we haven't had any of the vaccines ourselves, right? Or just the minimal numbers or something like that, so that when we go abroad, nobody tries to handicap us like you're talking about. Nobody tries to heap a disability onto us when we just spent all this time and all this energy acquiring those abilities. I can see that.
And maybe we could do one of those. I've heard of some of them, the sneaky people, they get two real passports. So they have one for one of this country and then this one so they don't know they went in that country. Maybe we could get one that's all filled up with extra pages showing all our vaccines that we can be proud of in the right context. And then another one that shows that we ain't never gotten one tetanus shot in our whole life.